and military veterans with construction careers. The Helmets to Hard Hats Initiative and the Construction Careers Foundation have both received direct appropriations in the past. This bill would grant $400,000 from the Workforce Development Fund in 2020 and 2021 only to Helmets to Hard Hats. This is, I guess, a perennial bill, but I'm just honored to do this. There's so many people in the room here, including myself, that have family members that active in the active or retired from the military, and any opportunity that we can afford the people that have served this country so well in their subsequent careers, we should be doing so, and this bill does exactly that. So we've got a few testifiers here today. We'll act quickly, and a couple of people that have actually benefited from this program.
So I'd like to bring up Tremaine Williams and Jeff Alleman to testify for us.
Sir, could you please identify yourself for the record also?
I'm sorry. My name is Justin Ross. I am the director of the Helmets to Hard Hats program here in Minnesota.
Thank you. Welcome, gentlemen, and please identify yourselves for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Tawan Williams.
Afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Jeffrey Alleman.
Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, it's in. Okay. I'm a first-year apprentice, small-town guy. I heard about this program from my uncle, who's a pipe fitter out of Minneapolis. Had no direction really where I was going, and he told me about this. And Justin kind of took the reins from there when I started applying. And without him, I don't know where I'd be at with a job-wise. New car, new house. I have everything to thank because of him with this program.
Okay, thank you.
Like I said, my name is Tawan Williams. After leaving the military, I was thinking of what am I going to do? I got a family I had to feed. I stumbled upon the program and was welcomed in. I'm grateful because it's given me a career without having to go to college. I served for 13 years. I did 3 deployments, and after doing all that, college wasn't on the radar. So this gave me an opportunity to actually provide for my family and still have a career path and also work for my community and help build for my community. And I'm just grateful. Okay. I wish we would when we went through our transition process, there was more people on the ground mentioning this to us so that more service members would know that, you know, this is an easy transition and you still do provide for your families without having to go to college or without skipping a beat.
Thank you, gentlemen, and thank you for your service. Is there any questions for any members of the Representative Heinrich?
I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take the opportunity to, again, thank you so much for your service, and best of luck to you in the future. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Are there any other questions from members of the committee? All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your testimony. Thanks for coming forward today.
Thank you, sir.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Thaden. I'm the board chair for the Construction Careers Foundation. This foundation mostly concentrates on people under the age of 18 and helping them get lifelong careers in the construction industry. But Helmets to Hard Hats is our over 18 program that we've got. 2 years ago, the legislature appropriated $200,000 the first year and $200,000 the second year for Helmets to Hard Hats. That gave us enough money to hire one person to do Helmets to Hard Hats program. And then a few months later, he got called up and he's in the Middle East. So like many employers, we regrouped and we hired Justin, who has got us through the program now. Our first person comes back sometime this spring. And so we hope to have both of them on board, which is why we asked for $400,000 each year. We'd like to have both of them on board with us over the next 2 years so they can do even more, get more into greater Minnesota, and also work on mental health issues with our returning veterans. Thank you. I've also got a spreadsheet, two pages front to back, which tells you how we have spent the money so far, and then our projected expenses for the two-year budget year 19 through 21.
All right, thank you. Is there any questions from the committee members? I have one after, I also sit on jobs, so first off, I'll labor. So first off, thank you for bringing the spreadsheet. That's one of the questions that came out of that committee, and so I appreciate that, the promptness of that. So after the labor committee hearing, when we heard this, I received a couple of phone calls for people that are involved that need CDLs. Is this, has the Helmets to Hard Hat program looked at working with some of the groups that are offering CDL training? Because in our road construction industry and also in our logging industry and other things, the companies are crying for drivers.
Justin, have they done anything with CDLs?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have looked into working with other organizations that promote getting the CDL. As of right now, what we try and focus on is organizations that have approved apprenticeships so that our veterans coming through the program can utilize their GI Bill benefits to supplement their income while they're going to training. We have not yet found a CDL program that works hand-in-hand like that, and that was one of the parameters that was handed down from the national office because we do partner with the National Helmets to Hard Hats program to allow veterans to sign up on the National Helmets to Hard Hats page, that was one of the parameters that we need to hit. We are certainly open to working with one when we find one, though.
Well, thank you, and I would suggest that you check into Hibbing Community College. Okay. They offer a CDL training. It's not a full semester, but they offer the training through their technology department, and especially in northern Minnesota, we need drivers, so we certainly have a lot of vets in northern Minnesota, too, so that might be a good fit. So, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Representative Detmer, you have A1 amendment, I believe?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I'll probably have a couple questions after after this. But if you take a look, committee members, to the A1 amendment, I'd like to offer that. And let me just briefly go through the amendment. When this bill was heard in the Chair Sundin's Labor Committee, and I think, Mr. Chair, you heard it too, we heard testimony that the lion's share of the helmets, the hard hats, existed of $800,000 was appropriate and went to two salaries of two people. And afterwards, people were asking me, where do I sign up? You know, and so I felt that it was probably a time to sit down and allow the group to talk more about their program. I think I asked for a spreadsheet of your expenses, and thank you for bringing that forward to the committee so that we can have a good idea where the money goes. And when requesting them about their expenses, asked for the budget details. The testifiers didn't have a detailed budget for us and could only provide vague estimates. And some of the funding went to office space and postage, but now we do have a spreadsheet that we can look at. The A1 amendment requires Construction Careers Foundation, Construction and Careers Foundation, must annually report to the legislature and Department of Labor of Industry and on the appropriation that is given to them. And the report must also include an overview of Helmets to Hard Hats budget and a detailed explanation of the expenditures, a number of veterans served, and a list of services provided, details on the jobs and the participants received in terms of where did they get their jobs, and a number of the participants placed in union jobs and also the number of participants placed in the non-union jobs. And this is a common practice of the legislature. The legislature often mandates reporting when we fund a program. I know I've come to the legislature to get funding for different different organizations, and many times the money is run through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs or it's through the Department of different departments within the legislature or within the government, and that they have to, like the Department of Administration. And the public expects an accounting of how their tax dollars are spent. I think we all can agree that. And I ask for your support of the A1 amendment. And I did talk to Representative Sundin, and he's fine with the amendment. And I hope that we can get this part of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm open for questions, too. So,
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank Representative Detmer for most particularly including the language of reporting to the chairs and ranking members of the House and Senate committees with this information. This information is actually all compiled and recorded with the Department of Labor, but just a little more sunlight on it certainly doesn't help. So thank you for making a good bill a little bit better. Thank you. And I urge adoption of the A1 amendment.
Representative Grassl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sundin, could you just let us tell us what type of apprenticeship programs? What about the A1?
We're on the A1 amendment right now, Representative Grassl. So we'll go back to questions in a minute. Any other questions on the A1 amendment? All in favor, say aye. Of adoption.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. A1 amendment's adopted. Thank you, Representative Grassl. Yeah, you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The types of apprenticeship programs are available to our in the Helmets of Hard Hats.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is a construction industry program, so it's sheet metal workers, plumbers, pipe fitters, electricians, carpenters, painters, operating engineers.
Follow up, Representative Grassl.
I think Representative Sundin has
Mr. Chair, I think the chair brought up a good point about the CDL licenses. There's also a high demand for teamsters or drivers in the construction industry, and that's important too. So I think that was a good point brought up, and I think it's open for expansion.
How about Representative Grassl?
Now, are these just any apprenticeship program in the state, or do these programs have to be registered with the state?
These programs have to, Mr. Chair, these programs need to be registered with the state.
Representative Grassl will follow up.
And these programs, are they restricted to union, or are they both non-union or union apprenticeship programs?
Sundin.
Mr. Chairman, to answer that question, in any registered apprenticeship program, there are apprenticeship programs that are not affiliated with unions. So any registered apprenticeship program.
Okay.
Representative Grassl.
Myself, I've worked in both union and non-union positions, and, you know, that's one thing I wanted to, was to ask is to make, to see if there was flexibility as to where these people could go and work and find and excel, because that's, you know, I mean, the main thing I want to get across here is that this is a program that is beneficial to our veterans coming home. Am I correct in that?
That's Sundin.
Mr. Chairman, he's absolutely correct.
Thank you, Representative Grassl.
Are these apprenticeship programs? So, since they're open to both union and non-union, there's no requirement that these apprentices go into join a union or anything like that.
Representative Sundin.
Mr. Chairman, no, there's no such requirement.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. Do you have a website that maybe you could share with the committee, and you know, how do you get that information out to the veterans or also the people that are coming off active duty or coming off the guard, reserve? You know, how do you get that information out, and do you have a website?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. The National Helmets to Hard Hats page is www.helmetstohardhats.org. The reason we utilize that website is because it's accessible across the entire world on the web. And it's also promoted by the national organization throughout different bases and things like that so that we can get word out to our veterans who are serving, right, well, are currently serving military.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. Do you connect with the MDVA or with Military Affairs? You know, they have websites too. Is there any way that you can connect with those organizations so that maybe there's a link to Helmets at Hard Hats from those organizations also?
Yes, we do. We actively network with as many veteran organizations as we can. If they have websites to post information on, we absolutely give them the website so that they can post it on there also.
Mr. Chair, do you know if select Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, if they actually have a link to yours?
Go ahead.
I do not know if they have a link on there. We are working with, I believe it's we.org as of right now, which is part of a veteran resource group, and other organizations have been reaching out to us to do the same.
Mr. Chair, when we hired our two people, the interview committee included people from Veterans Affairs and DEED. Okay. So they were there from the start.
And yeah, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Johnson is here from the department. Could he just maybe give us a yes or no if there is a link to the Helmets to Hard Hats?
Mr. Johnson, would you care to come forward? Oh, here we are. There he is. I was looking for you. Just state your name for the record, please.
Chair, members, my name is Ben Johnson, the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I was just checking my phone to see if it is in fact there. I believe we do. I believe I've seen it, and I know that we have collaborated with this organization, but I would have to confirm. I can do that in just a moment here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Johnson, I saw you in your phone there, so I thought I'd wake you up there.
As we've heard, what would we do without our phones?
Thank you. Thank you.
That's
you.
It.
Any other questions from the committee? Anybody from the audience that care to testify on either for or against this bill? If not, Representative Detmer renews his motion for that House File 119 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bill's on its way, Representative Sundin. Next up, we have House File 120, Representative Gunther. The chair will move that House File 120 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Gunther, please proceed with your testimony, and when the gentlemen get ready, they can identify themselves for the record.
Very well, Mr. Chairman. House File 120 is a tax credit for hiring disabled and unemployed veterans. House File 120 establishes a tax credit to employers to hire a disabled or unemployed veteran. Many of the veterans who have served our country in a global war on terror are returning with injuries and disabilities they suffered in war. The disabled American veterans estimate that nearly 4 million veterans have a service-connected disability. It is our duty as a country and a state to help these veterans obtain employment when they return. The disabled veterans recently published a guide to hiring and retaining veterans with disabilities. You should have a copy of that in your folders. Orion, a talent employment recruiting company, lists 15 states that have some type of veterans employment tax credit. Minnesota is not one on the list of employers who receive tax incentive for hiring disabled unemployed veterans. This bill has been heard in previous years, but has not made it across the finish line. The bill has been supported by the United Veterans Legislative Council and Minnesota Chapter of the Disabled Veterans. I have representatives from both organizations with me here and today, and they will testify on House File 120, and I will let them introduce themselves.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Trent Dilks. I'm the Legislative Director for the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota. Here to testify in support of this bill and in support of the creation of a state-specific tax credit for the hiring of disabled veterans. Thank the representative for including our hiring guide to disabled veterans in your folders there. The DAV is more and more aggressively working on this issue. As we've seen, the unemployment rate, and maybe you've heard the headlines of veterans, is overall dropping. If we dig deeper into those numbers, we see specifically post 9/11 veterans are at higher than national average rates. And within those numbers, women veterans are at a higher rate than their male counterparts as well, which makes up about 17% of the veterans there. When we look at our disabled veterans, and in that report or in that guide that was included in your paperwork, you'll see that 57% of disabled veterans believe they will be discriminated against if they were to notify a potential employer of their disability, of their injuries or wounds in service to the country, and do not intend to disclose that information. 50% believe they'll be discriminated, 75% do not intend to disclose that information. So you can see in the veteran population that these injuries, these wounds, they are seen as a hindrance in our population alone, and they believe that the employers are as well. So anything that will allow us to engage the employers, specifically help target disabled veterans, service-connected veterans, to bring them to the table and recruit them, to let them know that's in that document the various strengths and experiences that they bring to the table, we can maybe change that narrative and change some of the thinking within our disabled veteran population. So that's pretty much my testimony.
Thank you. Any questions? You can proceed, sir. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. That's 30 different organizations in the state of Minnesota, of which I am a life member of the DAV. I'm a combat disabled Vietnam veteran. And this kind of program was not available for anyone when we got out 50 years ago. And we concur with everything that Trent has put together. They've done a great job at doing that. As a matter of fact, last year was one of our pivotal things on the Veterans Day on the Hill, and it died in committee somewhere. We are wholeheartedly behind that, and he's right about the women being able to be involved with this more so than others. They seem to be behind the curve. We believe that isn't proper for the state of Minnesota to do this. The employers, the federal people gives a larger chunk of money for, I think it's $9,000 if you hire a disabled veteran. I don't know the numbers for an unemployed one, but these two things will certainly make it easier for veterans who are coming back from the current crises to be able to get back on board again. I volunteered twice. These guys have been two and three and four times over, and they come back and they're worn out and they need to get back with their families and have a job and have that reintegration in a proper manner. I thank the representative here for get this going again, and I hope that it gets through the process, and this year we can actually be proud to say that Minnesota is now one of those states that helps our disabled veterans get their jobs.
Any questions from the committee? Is there anybody from the audience that would care to testify for or against this bill? Mr. Johnson, welcome back.
Again, for the record, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here in support of this bill. I want to express that MDVA is generally supportive of this idea of incentivizing and encouraging businesses to hire disabled veterans. We're looking forward to assisting the author on any opportunities to address a couple of items of concern going forward in the process. For instance, the work opportunity tax credit, which is available at the federal level, operated through deed, currently allows a federal tax credit available to businesses who hire certain types of veterans. There are five different qualifying groups of veterans that are eligible at the federal level. So we're hopeful that we can assist the author in making sure that this is developed in a way that an employer could take advantage of both a federal and state credit. So
thank you for your testimony. Any questions? All right. The chair will moves that House File 120 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion fails. Representative Gunther, it's on its way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members?
Next up, we have House File 202. Representative Anderson. The chair will move that House File 202 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division. There is an amendment. Representative Anderson, would you like us to adopt the amendment now to get the bill into the shape you would like?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if we could adopt that now, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Anderson, I'll offer the A1 amendment, and all opposed say aye. Did I do that right? All in favor say aye. I'm nervous, guys. Sorry about that. All in favor say aye. Sorry about that, Representative Anderson. All in favor yep. say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The amendment is passed. The bill's in the share. It's in the shape you want, Representative Anderson.
I thought it was going down, Mr. Chair. So
sorry about that. And I wasn't even with you last night. So.
Mr. Chair, this bill is was before us last year as well. It passed through transportation as part of the bill that was vetoed at the end of the session. So it has been through the system once. It's a narrowly crafted bill to allow a certain type of military vehicle to be licensed and registered and operated on the streets and highways of Minnesota. It was brought to me by a constituent back home, and his situation was he had purchased a vehicle at a military auction, surplus auction. It was a M998 Humvee, if that means anything to some of you here. And what makes this unique was that pretty much very same vehicle has been offered for sale to the general public since 1992. It was a Hummer H1, the basic same vehicle, same basic weight, size, that type of thing. So what this bill does would allow vehicles that have the same weight and size as this M998 to be licensed in Minnesota. And, Mr. Chair, what the amendment does, current statute only allows vehicles that are said to be operated on highways to be licensed as vehicles, and we had to put the amendment in there to make a special exception here for these decommissioned military vehicles to say that if they meet the criteria, same size, dimensions, vehicle weight, such as that, they would be eligible to be licensed in Minnesota. And again, my constituent wanted to use his to put a snow plow on it, for example, and use it for plowing snow, and not heavily used, but that was the intention for having the vehicle licensed. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for questions from any of the members of the committee.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, did I hear you right that this bill applying only to one model of military vehicle?
Well,
did I misunderstand?
Representative Anderson.
Correction, what the language says that if it meets the same size, dimensions, and vehicle weight as a comparable civilian vehicle, it would be eligible. And that's the only one that I know of is this Hummer H1.
I see.
The same as a Humvee in the military.
Follow-up, Representative Purcell?
No, thanks.
Any other questions, Representative Detmer?
Just a comment, so we're not talking about tanks or anything like that, you know. So they make a good snowplow, so.
And as I understand, I was doing some research. These are mainly made out of aluminum. and they're diesel engines, so they're a powerful vehicle. But no, they aren't the tanks, and they have to have all the safety equipment that any other vehicle does to be licensed on the highway.
Any other questions? I have one, Representative Anderson, and this was brought to my attention. I'm probably going to add my name to your bill. I'd like it. But I had a call from a constituent about emissions issues from these vehicles, the military emission issues versus some of the other standards that are in the state sometimes are different. Does your bill cover this?
No, it does not, Mr. Chair. It just talks about the safety equipment being the same.
Okay,
but it is a diesel engine.
I guess I would recommend from that phone call that maybe before you go on to transportation that you might check into that to see if there's those kind of things, because they, if we ask it here, I'm sure they're going to ask it there. So. any other questions,
Mr. Chair? If you look at the bill, line 2.29, it says that the subject to same registration, insurance, and operation requirements as a motor vehicle. So I don't know if that would meet what we're talking about, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dittmer. That looks like it might cover it, so thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Anybody in the audience care to testify for or against this bill? All right, I'll renew my motion on House File 202 that, as amended, to be recommended to pass and referred, I'll get that right this time, and referred to the Committee on Transportation, Finance, and Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries.
Bill's thanks, Mr. Chair and committees.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Next up is House File 213, Representative Dittmer, School Counselors and Military Career Options Bill. Dittmer moves that House File 213 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Education Policy. Representative Dittmer,
that's right, proceed. Mr. Chair, and I'm out in force here, by the way, if you haven't noticed.
That.
And would like to thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me this hearing. For the committee, this bill went through the process last year, went through the House, went through the Senate, and it was part of the omnibus education bill that got vetoed. So I'm going through the process again, and I've asked the testifiers to come back. Some of them are new, to give a brief explanation of the importance of this piece of legislation. And it was brought to my attention, committee members and Mr. Chair, last year, that there are some schools that won't allow recruiters to come in and talk about the opportunities that we have in our armed forces, whether it's Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, or Coast Guard, active duty, National Guard, reserve components. And I was an educator for 34 years, military myself for 25 years as a veteran. And the recruiters always came into me in my school where I taught and always wanted to be able to have some access to students. And the school I taught in, I never had a problem. But I guess there are some issues out there. And then after we got it through the Veterans Committee, it went on to the Education Policy Committee. At that point, we amended it to also include the trades, because the trades, as we all know, that we have a shortage of trades in Minnesota. And we amended it so that now the bill also says that the trades also need to be invited. Just like the recruiters for the different branches of the military, the trades can be invited. Doesn't mean they have to come. But if the school is having a college fair to bring in colleges and universities and talk about opportunities there in a four-year school or a tech school, I think we also, to be out there for our students to say, what else is out there? And not everybody, not everybody is set up to go to a four-year school. We have our tech schools and we have the military, the branches, and also the trades. And I talked to the electrical trades, and we have a testifier here from the electrical trades. And I sat down with their training center down there and explained what I'm doing for the military. And they said, well, we're not really allowed in schools either, in certain schools. I said, well, okay, we'll see what we can do. And they went on to tell me that if you get an apprenticeship in some of these trades, like electrician, it's a 5-year apprenticeship. You're paid and you got benefits while you're learning the skills. And then they asked me, do you realize what a starting wage is for an electrician? Well, I haven't had too much electrical work done on my house lately, but they went on to share with me that it's about $70,000, $80,000 you start at, and no debt, no college loans. So those are things we need to make sure that we get out to our students. So with that, I'd like to ask some of our testifiers here just to give a brief testimony of what's important for allowing us to come into the schools. So Major Whitten.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Major Michael Whitten, United States Army Recruiting Battalion. I work at the federal building over at Bishop Heron Wibble across from the airport. On behalf of Lieutenant Colonel Foster, our battalion commander. I had a longer speech, gentlemen, but and ma'am, for brevity, I will summarize it as best I can. Bottom line is, had my school not allowed military recruiters in my school, or had my guidance counselor not encouraged me to consider JRTC as a course while I was in high school from Texas, I apologize about my accent here, I'm not sure where my path would have taken me. But my school administrators had the foresight to open the school to opportunities the military services offer. My school wanted their students to be aware of all options they had available and did not artificially restrain their selections by restricting access to the career choices like the Army. In my 14-year career, just for myself, thanks to the Army, I've been able to earn a bachelor's degree in economics, a master's degree in management, Lean Six Sigma Green Belt training, and transfer my forever GI Bill. It was the Montgomery GI Bill, then it was the post 9/11, and now it's the forever GI Bill. I'm able to transfer that right now in current present value. It's about $100,000 after tax value to anyone who uses it for active duty. But for my children, it'll be add inflation for that, enabling them to be absolved from student loan debt when they graduate college, and anyone else who so chooses to do that. For reference, Americans owe about $1.48 trillion in student loan debt, spread among 44 million borrowers. That's about $620 billion more than the total U.S. credit card debt. Our student loan delinquency rate is currently at 11.2%. That's 90 days of delinquency or default, with an average monthly student loan payment for borrowers aged 20 to 30 years at $351. The Army and DOD at large can stem this economic crisis. You'll hear about it every week on the news, and the Army and DOD has a solution, and we want to allow our students to be advised of that. So bottom line on why this access is so important to our students, only 20% of young adults can name all 5 DOD activity services, active duty services, 35% don't know there is a difference between an officer and an enlisted person. Only 15% of today's youth have a parent who served in the military versus 40% in 1995. And 51% of young adults aged 17 to 35 disclose they are not knowledgeable on active duty service. With that, I will give my time to the good major from the Marines.
And I'd like to introduce Major Andrew Nicholson with the United States
Major,
Marine
please,
Corps.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Major Andrew Nicholson, commanding officer, United States Marine Corps, recruiting station, Twin Cities. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to share my insights regarding how the state of Minnesota is doing, supporting our national need for all volunteer force. Like I said, I'm the commanding officer of Recruiting Station Twin Cities, and I oversee 4 states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, and South Dakota, regarding the future of the Marine Corps. I tell you that because it gives me an opportunity to compare and contrast the different states and policies that the states have regarding recruiting and supporting the all-volunteer force. My concern is the propensity to serve in Minnesota is significantly lower than the other states I oversee. For example, the youth in Minnesota is 6% propensed to serve versus 13% in Wisconsin and 16% in South Dakota. Only the state of Washington has a lower propensity to serve with their youth, and they're at 5%. I believe there are 3 reasons for this relatively low propensity to serve. Naturally, an early childhood exposure to the active military in Minnesota is almost non-existent. No active duty bases are a big part of that. I understand we're not going to fix that today, but it should be noted that the first contact most of our youth has with an active duty military member is in the high schools with a recruiter. Number two, speaking of the high schools, military access is often restricted, and clear disparities in determining recruiter access exist between schools and districts. Thus, depending on what school a child attends, generally determines a child's likelihood of considering service as a viable option post-school. Thirdly, in many cases where recruiters are unable to enter schools on a sufficient basis, which I recommend twice a month, our youth relies upon school counselors to provide them information on the military, and thus becoming a de facto recruiter in many cases. Unfortunately, a large majority of counselors lack the ability to accurately inform students about the many benefits of the military. To this end, it is my belief that we can improve significantly in the methods and ways educators are educated regarding military service. In closing, if we consider improving school access to recruiters as well as educating the educators on military service, I believe propensity to serve in the all-volunteer force will increase. And finally, I leave you with this thought. In my 30 months on this duty, it is now clear to me that the military is not an all-volunteer force. Rather, it has become an all-recruited force. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
And Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, I'd like to also introduce Staff Sergeant Scott McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you very much for having me out. I'm excited to be here today. I do represent the great state of Minnesota, born and raised here. I am on active duty currently as a recruiter. Interesting story, when I was in, I believe it was junior high, it was my very first exposure. I'm a little older than our target market at this point, so I know things have changed a bit. But the teacher that day told us, before the recruiter came into the room, that we didn't have to listen, we didn't have to pay attention, it was all propaganda, and they were going to attempt to brainwash us, really to not pay attention because he was going to fill us full of lies. That was her introduction, and then he came in and she said, oh yeah, this is Sergeant so-and-so, and he's going to talk to you, and she stormed out of the room. So that was the way I viewed military service, and this was high school in the 80s, so it was a little bit of a different time. I actually switched high schools through open enrollment and had a very similar experience at the next high school where it was made mandatory and we were actually encouraged and offered better options to not attend the military briefing. We could actually go watch a movie in the gym, which was a good movie they selected, which any high school kid will tell you that's how we're going to do it. It's a really frustrating thing. Sir, he really put it very well when he talked about, I like to refer to it, civilian-military disconnect. There is no active duty presence in the state. So the only image, the only real reference people have in Minnesota of active duty is family that has served, which the numbers are staggeringly low, or let's face it, it's Hollywood. So if we watch TV, we watch Hollywood, and then we hear these traumatizing results of injury, That's the image that's painted. And unfortunately, no one cares to tell the story of the average soldier. I have two combat tours. I'm an infantryman. I've been to Afghanistan twice. I have many, many exciting stories, but no wonderful tales of woe that I can regale you with of how I'm damaged and broken and need to seek help. My story becomes all of a sudden not as exciting, and we're not going to focus on that. But the things that excite me are what the military has done for me, what it has done for my family, the opportunities that have been afforded to me. We do a battalion education tour where we try to select educators and we bring them to a military installation to show them a day in the life or multiple days in the life of a soldier for the Army. And to watch their eyes open, to watch them all of a sudden, like it's everything they never thought it was. It's amazing to watch the change in these educators' eyes. I wish I was more prepared. I would have brought some of them with just so that you could hear their stories of what they thought they were going to see and then what they experienced. And every time we take them on these tours, when we come back, our access improves. But as a recruiter, I've been to many schools where I've been told that, yeah, well, you can be here because they say you have to be here, but you have to stand in this corner and you can put up a table, but you can't talk to anyone unless they walk right up to you. And you know, there's just a lot of stipulations put on. So it is very frustrating. would really like to be able to get our word out and show the options that military service can provide. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Staff Sergeant.
And Mr. Chair, one more military speaker here is Sergeant First Class David Lowell.
Good morning. Sergeant First Class David Lowell. I'm a recruiter out of Roseville Recruiting Center. This past week, I just hit my 20 years in the Army. I've had similar experiences going through my education where, you know, teachers were not supportive and whatnot. But as a recruiter on the other side of the fence, where I'm trying to gain access to those students, that roadblock becomes increasingly apparent. Without obviously putting anybody on the spotlight, I've had situations in my 10 years of recruiting where I've had a young man join, has a contract, fantastic educational benefits, got into a good career field that's going to serve him well on the civilian side. And the day after he enlisted, he called me and said, hey, my school counselor called me in to talk to me about my Army contract. And the school counselor had actually told him, more encouraged him that he should really consider his college options and that he should try and get out of his contract with the Army because the military wasn't going to serve him as well as a four-year degree. It's a separate situation, trying to gain access to a high school. The guidance counselors and the principal of the school were very eager to inform me that their students were college-bound and didn't need the military as part of their future. And with a national average of less than 19% of college freshmen ever completing their bachelor's degree in that four-year time period, the fact that having a career, having something to rely on other than a college education to be able to provide for yourself is increasingly apparent. But schools oftentimes don't look at the reality of the situation that if we have a world full of bachelor's degrees and nobody with hands-on job experiences like the construction trades you guys were speaking about earlier, the nation falls apart. It's not realistic to have 100% of our students, college bound. I myself, the Army was something my parents told me, hey, get your college done first and then you can do what you want. I was racking up the school debt. I was going, getting my associate's degree, and I ended up talking to a recruiter on my own. Joined the reserve, came back from basic training in AIT, my job training, and was able to use my military benefits at that point. To stop requiring myself to, get student loans and build up the debt to get my education finished up. So with the reserve, I was able to complete my bachelor's degree. I completed my master's degree in education and cross-cultural instruction. And I was a school teacher for a number of years until I came out to recruiting. So education is important, but unfortunately, that's not the point of education. Education is to get you, able to support yourself and be a contributing member of society. And the military, in my experience, the Army has been that key to making the difference between being, the average Joe and being someone who's going to actually be able to contribute more to the community than they take.
So. Thank you, General. Well, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Sergeant First Class Lowell. And we also have the trades here today. And I'd like to bring up Andy Snope with the electrical workers. And I know I met you over at the training center, and I was kind of bragging about what we're trying to do for the military recruiters and say, hey, we're having problems getting into our schools too. So I was fortunate to be able to get it amended to also include the trades. So welcome.
Yep. Thank you, Snope. Please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Eklund and members of the committee. My name is Andy Snope. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota IBEW. And we represent about 16 IBEW local unions, representing about 16,000 IBEW members in all aspects of the electrical industry throughout the state of Minnesota. IBEW members attend six apprenticeship training programs in the state, offering training in the electrical and apprenticeship journey workers and electrical construction, as well as the electrical transmission industry. Through the last few years, we, as well as other trades, have seen a drop in interest in our programs. We believe this is a direct result of an overemphasis by school counselors of a steering towards college and a four-year degree. My personal story, right out of high school, I enrolled in an 18-month trade school program and started immediately working as an apprentice right after I completed that program, ahead of most of my peers in high school. I've worked as an electrician for 22 years with great pay and benefits. I paid off a school debt of $4,000 in about 3 years after I started working, and that was from trade school, not from my apprenticeship. Our apprenticeship, you start earning money as soon as you enter the apprenticeship program. So 30 years later, last year, my son graduated from high school, and I sat through several planning nights at his high school. There was, again, an overemphasis, an overabundance of steering towards college and very little discussion of an alternative to that, whether it be military or trade school or any kind of alternative to college. The big push was on college. And college is not for everyone, and there are a large amount of high schoolers that graduate as a result are missing out on high-wage, high-benefit careers in the skilled trades, and they get out ahead of any kind of debt that they would incur if they went to a four-year college, especially now with college prices the way they are. The IBW supports more exposure in schools to the options of enrolling in trade schools and trades apprenticeship programs. Mostly it's just about access and getting into these schools and explaining that there is an alternative and convincing counselors that there is an alternative to a four-year school. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snope.
Mr. Chair, that completes my testifiers in here. And first of all, I'd like to apologize. I don't have the Navy here or the Air Force or the Coast Guard, you know. I'll have to work on that for the next committee. But I really appreciate these gentlemen, officers and non-commissioned officers that came in here. And it's great to, as a warrant officer, to sit with these gentlemen. And that we have a lot going for us when these men and women that enter the schools to talk to students about careers in our armed forces or our trades, that it's an eye-opener for a lot of students, I think. So I think we're doing the right justice in allowing these men and women to enter our schools when they're invited. And this bill says they need to be invited. Doesn't mean they have to come in, but the invitations will be there.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Grassl.
Just more or less a comment, Mr. Chair, but you did invite the two most important branches, Chair. So I appreciate that.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your bill, Representative Detmer. And regarding the schools where recruiters will be able to get in, is that public and private? What I was looking at the language, it says that they get special ed funds, for instance. So that's my question. Or is it open to all at that point?
Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chair and Representative, thank you for your service, first of all. But I believe that's... I haven't heard any problems of recruiters entering some of the private schools, but this is a bill that's open to all schools. So,
thank you.
Follow up, Representative Purcell. Any other questions? I'd like to go. Thank Representative Detmer for this bill. I think it's important, and we'll call for public testimony here in a minute. So. I think it's important. I think it's, and I really like that it's combined with the trades, because between the trades and the military, I think our young people are getting the short end of the stick. And I have two of those people, the students that you talked about, that are carrying the high student debt load. At least they're working in the field they studied in anyway, because not all of them are. They come out of college with a four-year degree, and then they got to take a job wherever they can get it. So I appreciate that. So.
Mr. Chair, I agree with you there, because, as you know, both our sons, our twin sons, after high school, they went off to West Point Military Academy. And I don't know if you realize, but right now, a four-year degree at one of our academies is worth about $300,000. And it's quite an experience. It's an honor to go through that process, whether you go through the process as enlisted, or as an officer. We have some great people, young people, and experienced people that are serving our nation.
So. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Is there anybody from the audience who'd like to testify on this bill? I didn't forget about you. Sorry about that. So, go ahead, state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
name is Tom Diamond. First of all, I'd like to, this bill was through last year and spoke at it at the committee meeting, and I'd like to thank Representative Detmer for working with people to address some of the concerns about how it got, it was structured, and I think it came out a better bill. What I would like to speak is just about one sentence in it, the last sentence of this, and I hope this can get corrected. And what the sentence says is, a school counselor must not interfere with a student's enlistment or intention to enlist in the armed forces. And my concern is with this is our school counselors have great responsibilities to help guide the students in them. They're professionals. And they have a requirement and a mandate to guide, provide guidance as they believe is best. This prohibits them, the way I read it, prohibits them from advising them if they believe it is not a correct course for them. And I would, if that's the way this would work, I would suggest that it's not just the puts the counselor in a really bad bind when they believe, for whatever reason, but as skilled professionals, that this is not the course for them, not to be able to advise them differently. And I think it's also important as far as for the services, because if you have a counselor that, for whatever reason, knows issues with somebody who's a recruit that shouldn't be serving, and we know of the issues that have happened at Fort Hood. I spent some time there. Your son serves there. There was a real tragedy there of one of the members shooting their fellow soldiers. So I'm sure that was not the intent here, but that's my concern, is that that get addressed so we don't have that kind of problem where our professional counselors can't do the job that they're required to do, or that we are encouraging somebody to go into a position that professional people know is not good for them or not good for the rest of the.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond and Mr. Chair. I know that I do have an amendment for when we get into the Education Committee to include, at the end it says Armed Forces, but I also omitted the trades. So I was going to amend the trades on there too. And we'll take a look at the language, see if it can be softened up. But this is something, I guess we're doing pretty good if there's just one disagreement on a bill. But we'll take a look at it, and I know my researcher is taking some notes here, and we'll take a look at it. But I do have an amendment for Education Committee to also include the trades there, too. And, you know, and I think the whole fear there, as you heard in the testimony here, that there are some educators out there, and there's counselors up there that, you know, might be directing people the wrong way, too. So we have to take a look at that also. But I appreciate your comments.
Thank you. Just a second, Mr. Diamond. Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if anybody can answer this, are the previous testifiers or some of these gentlemen, are there training programs available for counselors to enhance their knowledge of career opportunities in the armed forces and skilled trades?
Mr. Diamond or any other testifiers? Staff Sergeant?
Okay.
Again, Staff Sergeant McKinney, United States Army. We do offer on our end training with the educators tour that I talked about, which is a three-day intensive thing where we'll go through Army programs, Army benefits, college benefits, things of that nature. We also have approved presentations put together by our battalion staff assets, our Director of Education and Support Services, Dr. Susan Larson, things that will enable counselors to understand pros, cons, benefits, and, you know, especially qualifying and disqualifying processes. You know, anything where there was something that would disqualify based on, you know, psychological issues was one that came up. But yes, there are training things in place that we could, you know, help counselors understand the information or what's available out there.
Thank you. Representative Grossel, follow up.
I guess I'd have to ask, you know, is, oh, go ahead, sir.
Mr. Major?
Mr. Chair. So to clarify, the answer to that question is no. There's no state, as far as I'm aware, there's no state class requirement for counselors to be informed about the benefits of military service. Like the staff center said, it's upon each military branch here in the state of Minnesota to train, educate the counselors. So there's no standardization across the state. Cool.
Thank you.
I guess I have one more question.
Oh, Representative Grassl, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so with this, with the weeding out of individuals, whether they should be enlisting or shouldn't be enlisting, do we really want that to be left up to the guidance counselors, or is that something that our recruiters do on the front end before these individuals are sworn in?
Representative Detmer or whoever could answer that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ross, Representative Grassl, I think you've got a combination of people. You've got parents, you got teachers, coaches, you have counselors or deans and the recruiters. I think they're all professional people, and I think the parents should also have a lot to do with it too. But I think we are the adults, and we are to help and guide and give the options out there for these young people, because you know, they're 17, 18 years old. They're going to have to start making some decisions on their careers, and I think this is a good learning experience. And I know that if you talk to any recruiter, they'll be go out of their way to help and give information to the counselors and the staff and whatever about the different branches of the military.
I guess my question, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is that the recruiters keep their eyes open because of the point that was made about the shooting at Fort Hood, which, you know, it's to me, whether it was said or not, that was an act of terrorism. But with that being said, the recruiters, I'm sure, are doing background, having the background information, making sure that these people are qualified legally, and if they see something, they will themselves help the recruit or the prospective recruit take a different direction rather than the military.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, and with that, I know that I think part of the testimony we heard here that it's not a big percentage of our population and our schools that are even eligible to enter the military. You know, there's a lot of requirements to for our force today. So,
another follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, our guidance counselors, you know, they should be opening the doors and all the different, whether it's a four-year school, whether it's a trade school, or whether it's the military, they should be introducing our children to these different options that are out there, and not trying to dissuade them from one or the other.
Thank you, Representative Grassl. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for the Major. Sir, what is the percentage of recruits that would like to get into the Marine Corps? How many do you actually end up sending to boot camp? Is there a percentage metric there that you know there?
Major.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can tell you in the state of Minnesota, we send approximately 300 each fiscal year to the depots. We have about, this goes to the question the other representative was saying, there's a whole process to finding if somebody's qualified or not, and morally, ethically, legally qualified. So that process starts at first contact with a recruiter, with a possible applicant, and then that screening and vetting takes place at the recruiter level all the way to the official level at the military entrance processing station, MEPS, where there's a chief medical officer who will review each applicant's case, and background investigations do occur also. So it's hard to tell you what the percentage of how many kids we actually talk to on the streets to how many actually contract, enlist, and ship. I hope that answers your question.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Major. Appreciate it.
Okay, we have some more people testifying. And I know this guy, Mr. Tannen, please Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Tamman from Sudan, Minnesota, your district, of course, and proud to be from it. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I served with the 173rd Airborne. We were the first regular Army unit to go in 65 for the big buildup. I will acknowledge there were a contingent of Marines there to make sure we weren't inconvenienced by a great amount of enemy fire as we came in, so thank you for that. But, you know, my wife, the retired teacher, says I should mention that most of our counselors are pretty well loaded up with obligations already. I don't believe we should be saddling them with more technicalities. And I would like to address what military service is all about. Of course, I talked to recruiters before I went in, but I allowed myself to be drafted. We had draft board back in those days. But what combat is really like, I think of the one of our first confirmed kills in Vietnam was a 12-year-old Buddhist monk. Accident. But we blew away a 12-year-old kid. And when you think about going into the military service, we should be thinking about that. The goal of the military is not to educate our population. The goal of the military is to kill our enemies whenever it's necessary. Furthermore, I grew up near a community of Hutterites. We had neighbors who were conscientious objectors, and we were pretty accepting of that position. And those Hutterites, they would not bear arms against a fellow human being. Some of them died in prison rather than bear arms. Our conscientious objector neighbors, they would serve in the military, but they would not bear arms. They were in the medics, drove an ambulance. And so when I think about the purpose of this bill and this committee, you know, I think our calling is to serve our existing veterans and not go out of our way to create new ones. Our society is awash in military information. You can't watch a football game without seeing an ad for the military. The Super Bowl, we saw the flyover. We have a great deal of military promotion. I would hope that considering the direction our society is taking, that we would cut back on promoting military belligerence and promote a more robust diplomacy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please identify yourself for the record, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my name is Barry Reich. I don't have a prepared speech. This is more of a spontaneous deal, so bear with me. St. Paul resident, except for the 2 years that I served in the military. I spent 2 years in the Army, a year in Vietnam. I also spent 20 years in the trades after getting out of the service. You know, and I'm not anti-military necessarily. I'm in favor of all type. I'm glad you're bringing the trades in. And I think that our students need to get all kinds of alternatives, you know, plenty of opportunity. I don't like the overemphasis in our society today on the military. You know, we spend millions of dollars, the military budget on recruitment is huge. Over half of our tax dollars go toward the military. You know, we don't even talk about peace anymore. You know, where's the people coming to school talk about the Peace Corps or AmeriCorps or, you know, other ways to serve your country versus going to the military to get your education, college education paid for. I believe, you know, we need all kinds of alternatives. And I just don't like the push to military. You know, it's everywhere. I can't go to a movie, military. You know, it's everywhere. It's plenty of promotion, you know, plenty of promotion. And it's exclusive to the military. Let's add all kinds of alternatives that need to get into our schools. We're going to bring people in, let's bring them all in. You know, why push so hard on the military?
Thank you, sir. Before you go, Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, Chair Detmer. I guess I got to ask, is this bill placing more mandates on school counselors, or are they encouraged to present the options?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grossel, the whole emphasis is to provide opportunities for students.
You know, I taught school for 34 years. I know what it's like to be in an environment where there's more demands put on you and so forth. And I think our recruiters can be an asset, can be a resource for our counselors. And counselors, if they feel that they don't have the time to learn more, you know, just invite the recruiters to come in and provide some education for students and answer questions. The whole emphasis is if you're going to have a college fair, also invite your trades and your different branches of the military in to answer questions that students have. And they'll set up areas. I've seen a lot of college fairs. I know the three school districts I represent, there's no problem. The recruiters are there from the different branches, from the academies. And but I felt I needed to add the trades because talking to the tradespeople, they've been kind of omitted from our school campuses.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Sir, please identify yourself for the record.
Proceed. Yes, thank you very much for allowing us to speak. My name is Steve McEwen. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I wasn't 21 when I got out. I wasn't old enough to vote. I was a radio operator with the 4th Infantry Division. My father also won the Bronze Star for bravery of 32 months of combat in World War II, and my grandfather was wounded in the War to End Wars, which afterwards the Kellogg-Briand Pact, which I don't know if many of you on the committee even know about that, or educators or the recruiters know that it's against the law to go to war. That's what Kellogg Boulevard is named after. We in Veterans for Peace, and I am one of the founding members of Veterans for Peace, and also the newsletter coordinator for the last 28 years. And by the way, I would like to say the one thing I was encouraged in this hearing was to say about the training for the veterans, you know, the disabled veterans. I was heartened to hear that. I was also disheartened to hear the recruiters speak about the average one that comes back. And we have, on the one hand, say that we have this big problem with disabled veterans not being able to get jobs coming back. And I know you're addressing that to some extent. We're having the one hand say one thing and the other hand say the other thing. And I heard a lot of extreme bashing of our counselors and our educators. Where the military has to go in and educate our counselors? I don't think so. I have a college degree. I have also spent time in trade school, and I'm a retired out of the machinist union. I do think that there is, I agree with you, too much emphasis on college nowadays. But why does the military have to bless? Why does the money have to go through the military? What we need to have is more stronger counselors and more legislators get up and start saying, what is the future going to be? We are spending $4 billion on recruiting. That doesn't include offices, okay, or the salaries. We have almost 1,000 military bases around the world. We've got climate change, which young people are rising up to, and the counselors need to address that. And the military is the largest government polluter in the world. Now, put those two together. Do we need all those people at all those military bases? Do we need the recruiters in our school? No. What we need are alternatives to peace. It's a nonviolent resolution. I would suggest that all those ribbons that the recruiters have on there isn't because of building trades or for education. The military's objective, and you ask any general about that, and they'll tell you the truth, it's to train and to prepare to go to war. And we need to be more honest about that. And we need to have, and I quote, and I'll end here with a quote from Tim O'Brien, the Minnesota author from Worthington, Minnesota, who's one of the main features on the Ken Burns documentary. He said that if you've been told a war story and you feel good about it afterwards, you've been manipulated. I would suggest that the same thing is happening when the recruiters go into our school and we don't have full disclosure about what the military is really about, and then they want to put this burden on the counselors, whether or not that counselor agrees with the military thrust or not, to be put up on that. And I will say that this bill doesn't just encourage. There is still that word must that you haven't dealt with, that the first person that spoke about it. And that has to be taken out. And as far as options go, let's get the options out there, like Barry said, about the alternatives with peace. Let's have some peace education and face up to the things like the Kellogg-Briand Pact, that the Nazis were prosecuted. after World War II. That's why. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McEwen. And I will comment one thing. When our state rates somewhere with Missouri as far as school counselors, I definitely agree we need more school counselors to help out with the situation, and that would be a good start. And I wanted to say that now to be on record for it. So thank you for your testimony, sir. Anybody have any questions from the committee? Any other public testimony? Well, thank you. Representative Detmer removes his motion that House File 213 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Next Tuesday, our meeting, we're going to have presentations from the American Legion and Disabled American Veterans. We are still looking at the roster of bills to find out if we'll sneak a couple of bills in, too. So stay tuned. And with that, we're adjourned.